This episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast is brought to you by Monahans Marine. We recently partnered with Monahans and are excited to be working with a local marine business that has been serving the South Shore of Massachusetts since 1961. For decades, the crew at Monahans has been helping generations of boat owners with outboard parts, boat service, marine equipment, and fishing tackle. Their professionalism and passion for being on the water has made them one of the most reputable boating headquarters in the Northeast. Monahans is located on Washington Street in Weymouth, and they are currently a Jones Brothers and Tidewater Boats retailer and have the most well-stocked inventory of Yamaha outboards, parts, and rigging in Mass. The entire staff and crew of technicians have decades of experience, and as a recent addition, Monahans has built and rigged out a brand new 4,000-square-foot offshore and inshore fishing tackle shop. They are fully stocked with everything needed for offshore canyon fishing, nearshore bluefin tuna fishing, striped bass fishing, and more. We're excited to be able to use this new space as a home base to maintain our own tackle and charter fishing fleet, as well as use it as a spot to film some upcoming podcasts and workshops. As a part of this partnership, Monahans has been generous enough to give all listeners a discount on anything in their store and facility. So when shopping at Monahans, if you use promo code MBG24 at checkout, you'll receive 10% off any purchase in their tackle or marine department. To learn more about Monahans Marine, their location, boat and engine inventory, or parts, visit monahansmarine.com. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Mass Bay Guides. Mass Bay Guides is our family-run charter fishing fleet that's based out of Scituate, Massachusetts. We've been providing anglers with the ultimate fishing adventure for over 20 years. Whether you're looking to put together a multi-boat corporate fishing trip, a trip for your family, or you're an avid angler looking to catch a giant bluefin tuna, our crew will do anything it takes to make sure you and your friends and your family have a great day on the water. To book a trip with us, please visit the Mass Bay Guides website, www.massbayguides.com. You can search prices, trip information, and get the latest reports and links to our social media pages there. You can also find us directly on Facebook and Instagram and just search Mass Bay Guides. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Black Oak LED Lighting. Black Oak LED manufactures high-quality LED lighting at a reasonable price for the fishing, boating, hunting, and military communities. If you're looking to upgrade the lighting system on your boat, Black Oak LED provides many different options of marine-grade lighting, including cockpit spreader lights, LED light bars, undergunnel lights, and underwater lights. We've had Black Oak LED lighting on both of our boats for several seasons now, with zero failure, zero issues. They're an essential tool for us to help ensure safe rides home to and from our fishing grounds in low light and poor visibility conditions. And their series of marine spreader lights are also a great tool for getting bait fish to school around your boat in the dark. If you're re-rigging your boat or outfitting a new vessel, check out Black Oak LED for your lighting systems. Make sure to use the promo code GIANTBLUEFIN for 20% off your order. This episode is brought to you by Afuera Coffee Company. Afuera Coffee Company was started by and for people who not only love exploring the outdoors, but care deeply about restoring and preserving our environments and habitats so everyone can enjoy them for years to come. To help work towards this, they donate 5% of all sales to charities and organizations currently donating to Captains for Clean Water. Everything done at Afuera has sustainability as the main focus, sourcing beans from certified Rainforest Alliance farms, using compostable coffee bags, mailers, stickers, packaging, and of course, donating a portion of sales, not just profits, to protect Mother Nature. It is their dream that through many small decisions, such as choosing and brewing your go-to coffee, that we can all make a substantial difference in the health and cleanliness of our world. Afuera is doing it right and makes a tasty product. If you want to give Afuera Coffee a try, visit afueracoffee.com and use promo code MassBayGuides for 15% off your first order. Our guest on this episode of the podcast originally hails from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and currently resides in Kona, Hawaii. He's been running a successful charter fishing business out of Kona, Night Runner Sport Fishing, for over 15 years. Initially, our guest made the move to Hawaii to professionally surf, but plans quickly changed and he found himself on the path to being a full-time fisherman. We met our guest several years ago through the tackle industry and through lure making, and we've been great friends ever since. Over the past few years, we've been lucky enough to fish together in a couple places, including Kona, and he's made his way over to PEI to fish with us as well. He's a great example of a passionate and intelligent fisherman. His ability to stay relaxed, trust his instincts, and notice patterns on the water is truly incredible. He is also an extremely detail-oriented guy. Every aspect of his tackle and his vessel is rigged to perfection and is purpose-built. He's had a ton of time and experience with fiberglass and resin, shaping surfboards, making lures, and he's been able to dovetail those skills into running a charter business, customizing his boat, and constantly innovating. We'll always look forward to sharing a conversation with this guest. He's truly an incredible storyteller. We always share a lot of laughs, and he's just a transparent person. He's always willing to share knowledge and always has a positive attitude. So without further ado, please welcome to the podcast, Captain Sean Rotella and Night Runner Sport Fishing. Welcome to the Sea Bros Fishing Podcast, where we follow three words of wisdom. You can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the last, you'll just have to keep listening. Stay tight.
Am I coming off or what?
Get that
down.
Oh boy.
Let's see if I have a good enough internet connection here.
Well, you look amazing, so you got that much.
All right. let me grab some here real quick.
All right, yeah, take your time. The video quality is awesome. It's super clear.
All right, that's good. Let me put in my pods here so I can hear you guys better.
Oh, just nothing. Jumpy.
All right, how's that?
You're good. Great. You look a little sleepy.
Well, you know, day off. What else do you do? Sleep in.
That's it. Arthur's running the boat today.
His very first day as captain.
Are you petrified?
He's more petrified than I am. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, he was on pins and needles last night, but you know, he's been on the water plenty of times, like fishing and stuff with me, and we've caught lots of fish together, but it's his first time where he's going to have to make the decisions, you know, and it's also his first time parking the boat ever without anyone else there to like supervise. So I think that worries him more than anything.
It's a weekday though. There probably won't be that many eyes on him.
Oh, believe me.
It's a holiday.
Yeah. Murphy's Law, there'll be every eye in the harbor on him.
That's amazing.
Wow. What else is good, dude?
Oh, same old stuff, bro. I've actually been a little slow since New Year's with charter stuff. So we've just been in the shop here jamming out lures and staying busy. And got some pretty big orders, which it seems to come in like right at the right times. You know, I seem to get a big order when I have a slow rush on fishing and things like that. And it's kind of nice. It breaks it all up so I don't have to fish every day, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what a rough life when you have to go fishing every day.
Yeah. In flat, calm weather almost every day.
Yeah. It's a little cool this morning. It's, I think it was about 68 degrees.
Oh,
so
my God.
It's chilly.
Yesterday was one.
Yeah, one
degree.
One. I was waiting yeah, for the other one. Number there. Just one. Yeah.
Yeah, it was blowing 50 this morning and sideways rain. It blew all my lawn furniture all over the backyard, like Dude. The whole deal.
See, I'd like that stuff when I was vacationing for like a week and I'd be like, wow, this is really cool, right. But I just don't know how people live in it. You know, no. I mean, being here, we see people from Minnesota and Canada, Nebraska, and all these places, and they're like, oh, it's like 22 below. And I'm like, how good is your job? Like, it must be a really good job, you know? oh, but the ice fishing's great. And I'm like, bro, you lost me with ice, you know?
Yeah. Oh, dude, that's funny. That's funny. How's the fishing been?
It's been pretty good. It's been a pretty odd year. This whole fall and early winter was just phenomenal marlin fishing. And certain years are better than others, just like any fishery you've seen. And it was really good numbers, you know, not a lot of real big fish, although there was some 500 to 800, even a 9 was weighed. So there was some bigger fish mixed in, but the numbers on smaller fish were phenomenal. I mean, you know, 2 to 5 shots every single day of fishing, day after day after day. There's a little buoy that's right in front of town. It's like 3 miles away. It's filled up with bait fish, and you just go there and grab some little bait fish and put them out and catch marlin like they were my mice. They're just marlin everywhere.
That's nuts.
Sick.
So yeah, that was really cool. And it's interesting because I see certain people will make posts about, oh, Kona, it's surprising to have it so good in the off season. I'm like, you know, anyone who's been here long enough knows there's really no off season. It's just an off month and then a phenomenal month.
Yeah,
and right. It goes all year long. Like any single day, you've got lures in the water here. You got potential for really, really good fishing. You know? And it's not that far, even though you guys seem to be reluctant to make the trip a lot.
It'll happen yeah. again. It'll happen again. We're just in like a crazy logistics time.
Weird part of our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's good to see you, Taylor. I mean, it's pretty interesting. It's been interesting way too long. This meeting with me started out with you originally, and here I've been in contact with Brian way more times.
I know. Well, Brian made the trip. I haven't made the trip yet. Soon.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go a lot longer than a week.
He's going to make us babysit the kids and go over and have a good time.
Never come back.
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait, dude. Just be ready. We're going to live aboard the boat. You know, that's pretty much what we're going to do. So nice.
I still want to do the whole April Ono thing like you've been talking about. That would be a crew, dude.
That would be sick.
If we went there and just freaking slayed those things.
How into free diving and stuff are you guys? Do you like diving at all?
I used to like it before I had ear problems, but we don't do a ton of it.
I enjoy it. We just 5 foot of visibility and
we don't do it a lot.
And 65 degree average water temperature in the summer. It doesn't really make me want to die. Like we'll free dive like off the cliffs and like shoot to tog, like equivalent of like your shallower reefs, I would say. You know, it's like, I mean, probably not even, you're probably still deeper, but like 6 feet of water, 8 feet of water, like in and around the boulders. But I would love to do it. I just need to get in shape.
Yeah. That's Arthur's little forte. Sorry, I got a call coming in. I don't know if that interrupts you guys or not.
Audio's still fine. Audio's you're fine. Good.
Okay,
we're
good.
We're not recording video anyway, so.
All right, perfect.
Yeah.
So, Arthur is just an animal. He's got 4 minute breath holds. He's down at 100 feet for 3 minutes, no problem. But he keeps bugging me, like, are you going to get the guys out here? Are you going to get Brian and them out here? Are they going to come? Because we want to go to South Point. I want to do these. Just like a kid at Christmas thinking that he's going to be able to live on the boat for a couple days and just dive and fish. And it's must be nice to have that kind of energy, man. The kid just doesn't stop. You know?
He's
how old is he?
24.
Yeah.
Nice. And we get days off and he's on his boat. You know, he's got a little 17-foot Boston Whaler and it doesn't stop, you know, from the minute our boat turns off the keys, he's getting his boat ready and he's back out there free diving or surfing. And it's quite cool to see, man. I'm living a little bit vicariously through him now.
That's great. We were all there though. At one point, I remember the shanty days. We would charter fish
nonstop
7 days a week. And then we would go scum frogging on the ponds.
Fishing and drinking and more drinking afternoons. And then some more fishing.
Yeah. Not anymore, though.
Yep.
I don't have that energy.
And then
anymore.
We eat the fish we caught, and we drink the fish we ate.
That's awesome.
You want to start with some rapid fire?
Yeah, so the way we kick these things off, I'm sure you've heard, but we're just going to ask you a handful of totally random questions, all somewhat fishing related. I think we've actually – you've answered some of these when we were at the dinner table up in Canada, but I don't remember your answer. So I'm sure Taylor will have some tangents he'll want to run off on some of them. But yeah, we got like half a dozen questions. Whatever answer first comes to your mind, fire away. And if we go down a rabbit hole, no worries. That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
First one, we asked everyone this one. Superstitions. Are you superstitious? Do you have any fishing superstitions? This episode is sponsored by Costa Del Mar. If you didn't know already, Costa makes some of the best fishing sunglasses on the market. They have a ton of frame options and offer a wide variety of lens colors. And their 580 color enhancing polarized lens technology is tried and true. We are big fans of their blue mirror lenses for our offshore fishing charters and their green mirror lenses for inshore. They've stepped up their game big time and they offer a great new line of performance fishing apparel. We've been wearing a lot of it the past few seasons on charters. We found that all of it's well designed, comfortable, durable, quick drying. It can handle a beating. To check out Costa's great selection of sunglasses, apparel, and wide variety of other products, visit costadelmar.com.
Not really. I mean, that it's a little bit of a loaded question because I'm sure in the moment I'll probably give someone a hard time, you know, and be like, yeah, I told you shouldn't have them bananas. But, you know, it, deep down, I don't really believe it, but it sure works as a good card every now and then. 100%. But I'm... You know, I think more of my superstitions just lie in some of the like elements around me. Like I'm looking up at the moon at night or something and I'm like, oh, you know, it's 3 days from full. I love this. I know what's going on. And, you know, it's fishing. It doesn't always work with the moon, but that's what my superstition is, you know. But other than any sort of weird little quirks, I don't really have a whole lot, you know. People will get on the boat, and obviously the banana one's huge, and they'll talk about this and that. And I just look and go, yeah, do you believe in the Easter Bunny too? They kind of look at me like, wow, smart ass.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, well,
yeah. I feel like you have to be a smart ass in the beginning just to test to see who you're dealing with.
Yeah.
It works really well. Yeah. You weed out the crowd real fast. We're either going to vibe super good or I'm going to be upstairs for the rest of the day fishing, right. You know?
Yeah. That's yeah, why waste your time with the jokes if you know they're not going to get laughed at?
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
That's yeah. Funny.
At least I'll laugh at myself. You know? I'm not shy laughing at my own jokes.
There's nothing wrong with that. What about superpower? If you could have one superpower to help you catch more fish, what would it be?
Oh, man. Jeez.
Take
you
a few
know,
seconds.
I guess I would like to have sonar like whales do, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they seem to find everything in the water. And I guess the closest thing you can get to that these days is this Omni that guys are starting to rip through their boats with. And so, I guess my superpower would probably be money. So I could buy a $500,000 sonar for my boat.
Dude, that's great.
Dude, that is unbelievable.
So be rich. Out. You want to be rich.
Yeah, we actually just had a... Yeah, exactly. We had a conversation yesterday about some false killer whales and how I've watched them literally... stun fish in the water, and you're like, how did they do that? Like, I don't understand. Like, here's a wahoo, here's these pot of false killer whales, and the wahoo just rolls over on its side ready to die.
Yeah.
And how is that possible, you know? So I'm guessing they must have some sort of sonar to blast them out with,
you know? That is strange.
They hit them with a high frequency or something, you know?
How close are they getting to them?
Like, well, this particular incident that I saw one day probably happened about 20 feet off our bow. I'm just live baiting, going real slow, cruising. And all of a sudden I look up in front of me and the false killer whales are there. And I'm like, oh, great. There goes the fishing. And it's not an animal we see very often. And then right off the bow, I see this silver flash and I look and sure enough, I see a 30-pound wahoo just roll over on the surface. And I'm like, whoa, dude, check this out, and watch the whales come up, grab the thing by the tail. No problem. They held it out of the water and like showed it off to us and shook their little head so like, hey, weird. Look what we caught, you loser. Yeah. And then they dropped it and left it drifting down the side of the boat. And I yelled at my crewman, I was like, grab a gaff. And no sooner he grabbed that gaff and tried to gaff that fish, they came back out from underneath the boat and grabbed it. And we're like, nope, not today, buddy. You know? Wow. And so we talked to one of our friends that was fishing a couple of miles away. And he was like, dude, I just saw the same exact thing happen in the 820-pound marlin right next to my boat. And yeah, that's just probably one of the most interesting things that's I think weird. I've ever seen.
That's cool.
So yeah, somebody find out for me why the sonar, how can they catch their prey? Because there's not very much online about it.
I'm pretty sure you're correct. I think some marine mammals can stun their prey with sonar. I believe. I've read that.
Dude, that's wild. Pretty superpower.
I'll check it out.
That's wild. That's true. That's wild. I mean, I could see them getting close and like the, you know, the pressure or something does it, but how the hell would they do it?
Yeah,
I don't know.
They may have used.
We might need to move on.
I'm googling this right now. Taylor's going to ask the next question.
Go! Fire away.
Totally change topic. First thing that comes to mind: circle hook or J hook?
Circle hook live bait.
Yeah.
J hook trolling. You know.
Yep. What are you using primarily throughout the day? Both, or are you primarily trolling?
I am not a hardcore troller. It certainly has its time and place for me. I actually really prefer live baiting. There's something about holding the bait in my hand all day long that keeps me in the game. My mind doesn't wander. I don't stray away. I feel that bait talking to me, or we're speaking to each other through the line all day long. I know exactly what's going on back there. It keeps me really engaged. So I think mentally I'm in the game a lot longer holding a bait in my hand.
What's your favorite?
Trolling I use for traveling. You know, if I'm going to or from somewhere, especially in Kona, you don't go anywhere without lures out. You know, the last 600-pound fish I caught, I had one lure in the water and I was going 12 knots.
Wow.
And sure enough, big fish comes up, just piles on that lure. You know, so you never go anywhere here without a lure dragging behind your boat.
Wish bluefin ate at 12 knots.
Yeah, no shit.
Your hook sets would be really good.
Yeah, exactly. Echolocation stunning is like a debatable thing.
Okay.
Some people think different species of whales, like sperm whales and stuff, can do it. But others say like dolphins and other smaller marine mammals can't. So it doesn't seem to be a proven fact.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I've got some firsthand witnessing.
All right, and it's proven.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
What is your favorite circle hook?
Ooh, I am a fan of the Trocars. I like those. Yeah. I feel like they definitely have a nice cutting edge. They get in there pretty good. But you know, sometimes when you're a charter fisherman, whatever hook is available on the boat,
right? Yeah,
because sometimes you go through so many of them, and trips to the store, especially in Kona, aren't exactly you know, it's not like I have 12 tackle shops here to choose from, so
yeah.
You know, whatever we've got in stock is great. But I've done really well lately on a Mustad needle point, and then I do like the Trocars around, but you know, I can't honestly say that I have any one particular, like, no, I have to use that over the other.
Gotcha.
I'd say technique has probably been a lot better on the circle hook. Who's hooking the fish? How gentle are they? You know, it's amazing how light you can actually be to get a circle hook to set in place, and how long the actual hook setting process can take.
Right.
You know, it's not just a snap and jerk of the rod and you're on. Sometimes it's using almost just thumb pressure for, you know, 15 seconds just to get it to find the corner. And then when you push it up, it punches through.
Mm. Yeah. Especially with those Trocars too. Those things are so sharp.
Yeah. You don't need anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I got one stuck around my thumb one time and it hurt.
We used them for a while. We had a few break, probably like a half a dozen break. Now we're using those quick rig Charlie Brown hooks.
Yeah, yeah. I like all the quick rig stuff. You know, they come out of a good factory. Yeah. So all their steel is really good. And I definitely use a lot of their trolling hooks and stuff as well, too.
Oh, we'll get into that.
Yeah. If you were to pick one lure to feed your family, you can only use one lure. What would it be?
I would have to say a 9-inch blue jet, just a 9-inch blue jet head bullet. Probably catches anything under the sun around here, at least. That's pretty much a standard out in the spread almost every single day.
Gotcha. And on on that note, do you think color matters?
I would say color hues probably do play a notion in the water. I mean, you look at your bait fish, you know, when I was up there with you guys and see how green everything looks. It's green and yellow, and I didn't see any blue bait, you know. Well, here we have crisp clear cobalt water, and our bait fish are very blue. Some of them are dark blue. Some of them are icy blue. But I don't see a lot of green bait unless I'm really close to shore. And even the same bait fish you'll see off the ledge, when you see them on the ledge, they're greenish yellow. And when you see them out in the deeper water, they're blue.
Yeah.
So, you know, why not go with what nature does? But then again, some days you have a bright pink lure that just gets absolutely slammed all day long. And what have you ever seen that's fluorescent pink in the ocean every day?
Yeah, it's strange.
So contrast, you know, and everything, maybe making your lures blend in may hinder you more than you think, because there's a reason fish are the color they are, so they don't get seen. And here you are trying to make your lures not get seen.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
So there might be something to think about there.
I think there is some pink purple-ish though, like when you look at that, some like silver shiny,
not like the fluorescent that he's talking
about.
But
it's when the light hits it though at that right end, like it can definitely be a bright like pinkish purple for sure, you know.
Yeah, it's like that rainbow foil that hits every color of the prism. I see that in a lot of fish. You see pink and purples and everything shining off the bottom of the fish in real pale color. But definitely Taylor nailed it. The squid, I mean, we see the squid and stuff at night, and they're every bit of pink and purple with some brown and polka dots. And we use a lot of brown and root beer here for wahoo fishing, and that's 100% squiddy looking color.
Yeah.
Especially in the daytime when they're up on the surface, they're like really dark brown.
A question to go off that question that you kind of answered, but you might change your mind. So your favorite lure was a blue bullet if you were going to feed your family with it. What is one color that you would put on all of your rods?
This episode is brought to you by Rodan Marine Systems. Technology in the marine industry seems to be improving at an exponential rate from year to year, and Rodan Marine is at the forefront of the GPS anchor and trolling motor industry. We've been running a Rodan GPS anchor on our 30-foot center console for a few seasons now, and it's been a game changer. With quick deployment and the simple push of a button, you can anchor down on a spot and stay within a few feet of your target location without having to deal with a traditional anchor, 20 plus feet of heavy chain, 400 feet of anchor line, obviously depending on how your setup is, but it's just very, very convenient and accurate. The fishing applications for using a Rodan are really endless. We find it extremely useful for both our inshore striped bass fishing as well as our offshore tuna fishing. And the customer service and support at Rodan is amazing. They offer overnight shipping on parts and are available to troubleshoot any issues that you might have. We've put close to 1,000 hours on our motor and have had next to no issues. Any problems or questions that we've had, the team at Rodan responded quickly and has had parts to us the next day. If you're interested in taking the next step on improving your boat's anchoring system and giving yourself an advantage when it comes to fishing, make sure you check out Rodan Marine Systems' line of GPS anchors. Visit rodanmarine.com to check them out.
Well, I love purple, so I'm just gonna. I'd have purple everything.
Purple everything.
Yeah, yeah. I'm down with purple. It's probably one of my favorite colors. I'm surprised my boat's not purple.
I think I know why your boat's not purple. A lot of my lures
are purple. It's funny. My whole spread's purple right now. I don't even actually
have
one blue bullet on the counter, and everything else is purple. I just love the color. So I figure if I like it, they like it too.
So your Feed Your Family lure was blue, and you want all of your lures to be purple.
It's
pretty much.
Wow. There's a little bit of
just goes to show you how everybody's just literally insane in this industry.
You know, blue, purple, you know, purple's just really a rendition of blue. So we're still on the same page, you know? Right.
True, true. Yeah. So a purple
it's in that spectrum.
Chad, you can ask this one.
What was the biggest tuna you caught up in Canada, Taylor wanted me to ask. And this
vicariously, I caught a 600 pounder.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
I did get to put my hands on the thing, which was cool enough for me to just see it fresh out of the water and still with the slime on it and the color of the skin and the size of the scales. And I was what I wanted to see. It was, I don't care if I'm the one pulling on the rod. Yeah, I'd love to see the bite and hear the real scream and do all that stuff and everything. But I'm not a guy that needs to sit in a chair or yank on a rod to feel the power. You're there in experience, and watching the guys in their element is everything. But yeah, that was actually really cool seeing that fish, like, even though it wasn't heart beating alive, it was still alive. Mm. You know, the skin was still alive. The chromatophores were still there, and it was a beautiful creature. And, you know, all I've ever seen is yellow fins and big eyes to see this dark tuna, you know, it's such a dark colored, and it was really neat. Yeah, I was pretty stoked on that. And the mouth, how black the mouth was on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. They are crazy animals. And I think, you know, obviously the reason why we want to ask that question is out of, you know, a lot of our friends, fellow fishermen, charter guys, you know, pretty much all our close friend group has that perspective. Like, it's not, you know, you're going to a destination fishery. You're going to try to catch one of the biggest fish in the world. It isn't necessarily going to happen. There's so many variables to it. So being able to appreciate every little nuance of a trip and what you learn and what you see and the people that you meet, it really is what this is all about. I mean, I think, and hearing you say that too, it's, you know, it's reassuring and, you know, lets you know there are people out there that have perspective on this whole thing.
Yeah, that was a great trip, man. I loved every second of it. It was, you know, and for me as a captain and running a boat and dealing with charters, like my highlight was sitting next to captain all day and watching his ups and downs and just identifying with him so much. And, you know, the day we had fish start blowing up everywhere and we're running and gunning and chasing down and they're moving and I'm watching them feed on this little tiny bait. I'm like, yep, they're just tunas being tunas. Good luck catching them, you know?
Right.
And watching, you know, watching our captain, our crew, everything ramp up and just get so, and then watching the deflation like slowly go as we're like, oh, this is getting harder and harder and harder. And I could identify with that so much that I appreciated every second of the moment, you know?
Yeah.
It was great.
It was awesome. It was so much fun having you guys.
Dude, that video is nuts.
That is honestly one of the craziest surface feeds I've ever seen with giants. Was that day.
Yeah, that was cool, man.
That was wild.
I actually had quite a bit of engagement on that. And people were just like, oh, bro. Oh, my God. I can't wait. Oh, and I'm like, oh, man, if you only knew what we went through just to see that 10 minutes, you know. Yeah. And then to not even have that 10 minutes pay off anything more than a bump on a spreader bar. And, you know, that was it.
But I will say you got a few bumps out of the cod and flounder, though.
Oh, that part was cool.
Yeah.
You know, that part definitely reminded me of charter expectations. You know, I get charters all the time. They're like, well, can't we just do this or can't we just do that? And I'm like, no, just shut up. You know? And here I was, the guy that's like, hey, I'm going to drop down here and catch these little cod. You know, hey, can we go back to the dock? I can wait to catch these flounder. And so it did put it perspective for us when we got back home that we did have a little bit better understanding of like what some of our people are actually meaning when they say that, like what their feelings are when they're saying that sort of stuff. So I do encourage charter captains and fishermen to go on charter trips and be the charter and see what it's like to be in their shoes again. Cause you get so used to your own routine, you know, your boat's your own home and you're basically bringing guests into your home every single day. And it's really easy to like kick your feet up on the couch, but if a guest walks in your house and throws his feet up on your coffee table, you're gonna be like, "Hey, bro, out of here!"
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know. So, yeah, you need to get back out of your element every once in a while and see what it is from that perspective. I think it's very healthy to do.
Mm-hmm. Helps you build your own business, your own system, and improve for sure.
Good point.
So, how did you get into the whole game? I know that part of the reason or the reason you made your way out to Hawaii. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is surfing. So how did surfing evolve to, you know, a few, decades now of charter fishing out there?
Yeah. So, you know, growing up in Virginia Beach, not very far away from you guys, I had the Chesapeake Bay. Literally, I walked a half a mile and I was down right at the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay. So I played with flounders and spots and croakers and stripers and all the cool stuff that comes in there. And I was doing that as a little tiny kid. So fishing was definitely the only thing I could pay attention to. School, good luck. I was the worst student ever. If I was there, I was drawing pictures of surfing or fishing, and that was it. As I got a little bit older, you know, I was definitely starting to surf with my dad. He got me in the water a little bit. And the same way he got me in with fishing, it was more like, here's the surfboard. Here's how you go ride a wave. And then I took the rest from there. It wasn't like I came from a long lineage of pro surfers and pro fishermen. Same thing with fishing, you know, here's a fishing pole and a loaf of bread, sit on the dock and catch these bluegills. And after the first bluegill, that was it. You didn't have to show me anything else. I was teaching, you know, them how to fish after that real quickly. Flash forward into, you know, 17 years of my life. I'm now, you know, doing a full competitive circuit of surfing and trying to surf every single contest and thinking maybe I want to try and be, you know, pro or competitive surfing and traveling up and down the East Coast and making a few trips to California. I obviously wanted to fish everywhere I was going to. You get to California, eventually they're like, dude, if you're going to do anything, you got to go to Hawaii. You got to kind of like really charge and like prove yourself in some big Hawaiian surf. And, you know, if you can hang there, then you can hang anywhere. I was like, ooh, Hawaii, I don't know. It's crowded. There's a bunch of angry locals who want to beat you up. I'm like, doesn't really sound that fun, you know? And I got off the plane. I paddled out. And it was probably about 2 hours. And I was like, I am never going home. I was like, this is it. I actually am. I'm like, I felt more at home there than I ever have anywhere else in my whole life. And I told my dad that. I was only supposed to be there for a week. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to stay here. He's like, are you out of your mind? I was like, I don't know, but I'm definitely staying here. And that's it, man. I stayed there and never looked back. So progressing into the fishing part of it, I was building surfboards. That was what was kind of keeping me afloat because I, as good as I was at surfing, I wasn't money good, you know. And so I was building surfboards a lot on the side, glassing for other people. I set up my own little shop at my house, actually, which is so Hawaiian style that you can have a house and like underneath it, you can build a completely illegal surfboard factory. and nobody cares. It's just part of the ambiance of the place. Like that's what you do to get by here. You know, everyone's got some little tinkering thing around their house. And so messing with all the resin and stuff that I was messing with, I was working at a place called Fiberglass Hawaii, and Fiberglass Hawaii is basically in charge of distributing almost all of the fiberglass materials, whether it be septic tanks or concrete or surfboards or you name it. The materials come through Fiberglass Hawaii to distribute throughout the islands. So it put me in contact with pretty much every single somebody who's somebody. And, I had a couple of old guys used to come in and buy resin and make their lures. And turns up these guys that I'm basically selling resin to and loading resin in their car are Joe Yee and Tom Futa and, you know, Randy from Paulukai and all these guys that are just really, really well-known lure makers. And at the time I had no idea who I was even talking to. And, they were super nice. You know, they took me in and showed me a lot of things. Said, "Oh, you need to do this, and I'll make a mold here and do that." And, you know, kind of passed on just a touch of knowledge to light the fire for me to start making lures. And from there, they said, "Oh, if you really want to make some lures and like get your name out, you got to go to Kona. You got to go like over to Kona. That's where all the big guys are. That's where all the marlin fishermen are. They're big lure junkies over there. Go check them out." So whipped up a big giant batch of lures and hopped on the inter-island flight, which is about 45 minutes, came over to Kona and started walking around the docks, not really knowing anyone. I knew one guy who was Neil Isaacs, Captain Neil Isaacs. His brother Norm Isaacs ran a fishing show for a long time. That was an introduction through old man Tom Futa from Futa Lures, and jumped on his boat and fished with him in the deckhand, and caught a really nice fish that day on a lure I made, which was pretty cool. And the deckhand set me up with a few other guys in the harbor to go fish with for the rest of the week. And that was it, man. I walked behind one boat and just one of the guys said, "Hey, oh yeah, this is so-and-so," and introduced me, and hopped on a boat the next day. The guy basically says, "This guy, Chuck." He says, "Well, you know, you want to like hang out here and work for a while?" He's like, "My deckhand's leaving. And I'm booked up the next 2 months straight, and I could really use an extra hand." I said, "Well, I mean, I have limited knowledge. I've been fishing on Oahu, you know, occasionally, certainly not professionally. I know enough to be dangerous." And he said, "Don't worry about it. You'll figure it out. You know, we're going to do some simple stuff." So went out, fished with him for almost 2 months, and took back off home and really pondered what I was going to do with life. And all of a sudden I get a random phone call, and it's from Chuck. And he's like, "Hey, man," he's like, "I got a boat for sale." And I'm like, "Dude, I'm a surfboard maker and a lure maker. I ain't got no money, so I don't know why you're calling me, you know?" And he says, no. He says, this is kind of a cool deal. He was intertwined with one of his buddies that Canadian citizen, but the money wasn't real legal with this particular individual. So he got deported, and Chuck had his boat, and apparently they still owed each other some money. So Chuck says, "I'm going to give you this boat, and you're going to make the payments to me, and we'll go from there." And I was like, "Okay, are you sure about this? Well, how am I going to get charters?" He says, "Don't worry, I'll give you all my overflow charters. I'll keep you busy." He said, "If anyone can do this, you can do this." He said, "I worked with you for a couple of months. You never shut up, as you guys can tell." He said, you love to talk to people. You're so excited about the simplest kind of fishing that it's gonna work really well for you. Trust me, I got a feeling." And sure enough, it took me about 3 years to pay off the boat, and I never looked back, man. I can't believe I made the jump and did it. And I had 1 year with a captain that was already on the boat, and I basically soaked up everything he could tell me about working that boat, how those motors worked, like everything that broke. I was in there fixing it. Like there was no there was no handbook. It was, you get in here and you figure it out. And I probably made the jump up to a captain a lot faster than I should have, or some guys have, but there was no looking back. You know, I was invested. So it was just fate. You know, I mean, who gives you a freaking charter boat? Like, who does that? Yeah. You know,
and, it's more than fate, though. It's work ethic, you know, and
yeah, you could have asked anybody.
Exactly. And that, yeah. And that's why, yeah, I think you made the jump personally anyway.
Yeah. 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 I was, I still baffle at it sometimes. And I get asked that story a lot by a lot of charters. So, I mean, I've told this story a thousand times, and it never gets old to me, because I still look back and say, man, what a chance encounter, you know, and that's
wild.
How many people get chances and, "Oh, that's a crazy idea. I'm not doing that." And they don't take it. You know, and of course I'm not really good at saying no. I'm like, "Yeah, okay." Like, you know, what is life if you're not trying to ruin it the whole time? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you still, do you still surf at all?
This episode is also brought to you by LT Marine Products. Since 2011, LT Marine has been designing and developing innovative, unique, and high-quality American-made sport fishing equipment. Taylor and I have known the crew at LT since they started. Chris is a great guy. We've been using every single piece of equipment that he's made over the last several years. His rod holders are extremely heavy duty and high quality. He has the machining equipment to be able to put your boat name on the faceplates and do other custom work as well, which is pretty cool. And recently, over the last couple of years, we've worked with him to develop some new products that have actually been very popular amongst the Northeast fishermen, specifically offshore and tuna fishermen. So two of those products have been his swim hook for if you're harvesting a big giant tuna, you want to take care of that fish as best you can prior to bringing him on board. And part of that process is after the fight, swimming the fish, for a certain amount of time, kind of depending on the health of the fish and how the fight went, but usually ends up being around an hour to get all the lactic acid out of the muscles and give a better product at the end of the day when we sell our fish. So we helped him design an affordable swim hook to be able to tow the fish behind the boat at a low speed and accomplish that goal. So that was a pretty cool product that we collaborated on. And another one is the new LT Marine release hook. We've been doing a lot of release fishing for giants over the last couple of years with the way that the quota has been open and closed. So we've really had a need for a way to properly revive these fish and get them back into good health upon release. So if you go on the LT Marine website, you can see the release hook there. You can also go on our Instagram, Facebook, and see how we have it rigged. But it's a tool that we've implemented into our process aboard our boats, and it makes releasing fish a lot safer for the crew, a lot better for the fish, and it's a really high quality product. We used it all season, never had a problem, never broke it. So definitely check out that new release hook from LT. Or if you want to see any of Chris's products, visit ltmarineproducts.com. Please make sure you use the promo code CBROS for 10% off your next order.
You know, I have had a little resurgence back in the water. I tore my ACL about 3 years ago, actually boxing. I was getting pretty heavy into boxing and jiu-jitsu and slipped on the mat and just tore my ACL. And then COVID happened, so I wasn't able to schedule surgery. And I've gotten so used to walking around without my ACL that I'm fine every single day, like going up and down the boat, no problem. My day-to-day routine, no problem. If I try to like do some activities, it's a problem. So I haven't really been on the water a whole lot, but actually that trip that I took to Canada on the way home, we stopped and saw my parents in California, and I was really excited to show Arthur all the surf spots where I spent some time. And I went down there and looked at the waves, and they were so good that I was like, okay, I'm going to have to grab a longboard and just go try and surf. Like, I can't not pass this up. And I had a bunch of boards that I had shaped for my dad in the garage and grabbed an old longboard and put on a wetsuit and paddled out. And my first wave was a little wonky. And then my second wave wasn't too bad. Then my third wave, I pretty much rode like 400 yards all the way down the whole point. And I was like, okay, cool. I could actually still surf, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So came home and kind of got back in the water a whole lot more, you know, I'd try to get in a few days a week, but I'm very handicapped with the knee, so we'll figure out where it's going to go, if I'm going to do the surgery or not. It's a long recovery.
It is. You know? I had mine. I tore my ACL back in high school, and I did the whole patella graft thing, and it's a doozy of a recovery. It was fucking brutal. On that motion machine, you're not sleeping, and but now it's stronger than my other knee. So
yeah, and you were young when you did that recovery.
Exactly.
So that's the other thing is, here I am 44 years old and not in the greatest shape I've been. How long is the recovery going to be?
Yeah.
But there's little excuses. I just need to get on it and get charging. It's about what I want, you know?
So take us through the, so now you got the charter boat, you've been doing it a long time. You've talked through the evolution. What sets Kona apart from other spots in Hawaii and also other, you know, offshore destinations around the world? I mean, I know what it's all about, you know, Taylor does as well. And even not being there yet, but kind of talk us through what makes it a special place, you know, in general and for you.
You know, that's definitely a lot of facets to that story. I'd say number one, obviously, for Kona versus the other islands is the calm water. We're in the leeward side of the island, and the volcanoes are 13,000 feet, so we have a lot of lee, and it's super calm. Those volcanoes dump right down into the shoreline and right down in the ocean, so my 100-fathom curve is literally as I'm leaving the mouth of the harbor. You know, I'm setting lures in the first 2 minutes of fishing, and there's so many times where you're getting wahoo bites, Maya Mays, or even a marlin bite, and you don't even have all the lures set up yet. You're still looking at the mouth of the harbor. So that definitely makes it really unique. I've never been anywhere else where you can see cars driving up and down the road and watch marlin jumping in the background at the same time. I think that's pretty special. Mm. And that's a very iconic photo with a lot of the guys that are here. Like, that's their favorite picture, is a picture of a marlin jumping, and you can literally see, you know, details in the palm trees that are on the beach right behind you. The other islands are more exposed to the trade winds, so they do get a lot rougher. Of course, I think a normal Hawaiian day is probably not that much out of the ordinary from most other offshore destinations. You know, 15 knots of wind, you know, 4 to 6 foot sea, nothing real unexpected. We don't have pop-up weather. There's no thunderstorms that roll through here and just all of a sudden take you from 2 feet to 10 feet. So that's, you know, the average guy in a small boat can fish around the islands pretty well. The other thing I think that makes Kona so special in terms of a billfish destination is when it comes to really big fish, there's obviously really big fish that cruise through here. And when you hook really big fish and the water's like really nice, you can chase that fish all over the place, man. You can back down hard. You can stay on top of it. You know, when you're leadering it, you're not going up and down 6 to 8 feet at a time on the leader. It really makes a big difference on being able to deal with those big giant fish. Mm. You know, the small fish are small fish, you know, it is what it is, but I think more monsters get caught here because of that water condition that makes it so easy to deal with them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, to the boat caught leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And our to the boat caught is a little bit more strenuous than some of the typical locations I see. We're not just getting fish to the leader, popping them off real quick and saying, "Oh, release." You know, a lot of the guys keep themselves, even when they're not in a tournament, they keep themselves to a tournament standard, which is, for us, you would actually have to physically put a tag in that fish to call it a release. So it has to be within 8 feet of you to be able to poke it with a tag. That's our length of our tag stick. Hmm. And so that's kind of the standard the guys hold themselves to here all year round, rather than just touching leader. And, you know, you can do it for your charter and say, "Oh yeah, nice fish. You know, you caught them. We got them to the leader. You did a good job." But personally, you're like, "Yeah, we pulled one off on leader." You know,
we kind of do the same with us for you know, releasing giants. It's kind of like if it was an easy harpoon shot, we would call it a release. Sure. Even if for some reason it chafes us off, it's like, yeah, if we wanted to kill it, we could have killed it. But, you know, mm-hmm. if it was a long dart chance of a shot, we would have said, you know, pulled the hook or chafed them off or whatever. So it's similar.
Yeah.
It's a good standard to set yourself by too, because it's only going to make you kind of get more in tune with the moments that do count. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one of the things I learned actually is my first year. I remember I was clearing the lures kind of slow, and the guy that I was working with kind of snapped on me. He says, "What are you doing, man?" He's like, "Why don't you move like there's a fish back there?" And I was like, "Well, I'm just clearing the lures to come in." He goes, "Yeah, but if you move like there's a fish back there every day, when there is a fish back there, you're going to be able to kick it up a notch higher." And so that always stuck with me, that I was like, okay, so everything you do, do it with intent, you know, do it at the proper level. So when it's really extreme, you're able to be in the zone and it doesn't feel out of place for you because you're always there, mm-hmm. you know? Panic. I hear you guys say gorilla panic all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that is the worst enemy out here. It's I've watched it so many times, and I watch it every day in our charters, is they just freeze up, they panic, they are breathing so hard, they're gripping the rod like death. And so my job over the last couple of years has really been become a stress reducer. I actually run down from the bridge, and once they're clipped in and my crew's clearing all the lines, I'm giving like yoga lessons to the guy or the girl in the chair. And I'm like, okay, just breathe. Just listen to me. Okay. Keep wriggling. Listen to me. Just relax. Before you know it, man, they're done. Down in the chair done. And they're breathing and it's good. So,
I always tell people they need to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, when they hook these bigger fish and they're on them for a long time, they get so tired and their adrenaline is rushing that they forget that they're doing this for fun. They think of it as like a job, as work. But
it's people are a little hesitant too. Just the style in which we fight the tuna here is, you know, we don't have a chair. It's not like, you know, it's different in that respect. We're fighting from the holder. So we get a lot of people that they like are too scared to crank on the rod. Like, I don't want to be the one to lose it. It's like, well, I don't either.
It's your fish to lose.
So have fun with it, you know?
Yeah, you lose
it's
you
your
lose
fish it. To lose, man. Don't worry about it.
Exactly.
You know? I tell them that all the time. I'm like, I tell them even in the middle of this fight, I'll start telling them a story. I'd be like, if it's hooked really good, you can get up right now and go read the newspaper in the bathroom and come back and it's still going to be here. I was like, there's nothing you're going to do wrong except for that one thing I told you about backing off the drag, like reaching over and freeze pulling the reel.
Right.
Like, that's about all you can do wrong. So just have fun. If it comes off, it comes off. And it is important to tell people, like, don't worry about it, man. Like, I'm not gonna freak out, you know. Oh, rah, 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 you lost the fit. Like, nah, I'm like, they come off. Don't worry, mm-hmm. you know, it's no big deal. I think it's important to be that way with people because, you know, I think experience too. I don't know why some captains are still screamer and yellers after they've been at it for all years, but I think the more experience you have, the less you do get wound up about minor events. You know, you're just like, it happens. It's no big deal. You know, all we're going to do is set back up and go catch another one. Don't worry about it. You know, and keep that flow going and you're fine. You know, as soon as you get in your own head or get grumpy, you know, I think the fish don't like to be around grumpy people either.
I agree with that. I
agree. They can feel it. We paused this episode for a quick announcement for one of our good friends, and fellow charter captains, Jesse Martello, Jesse's son, Jesse Jr., was recently diagnosed with an aggressive form of leukemia called T-cell acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And while the outlook for Jesse is optimistic, the battle is just beginning. The doctor's initial prognosis indicates that Jesse Jr. is in for a fight that could last 3 years with chemotherapy and many hospital visits during what should be the prime years of his youth. And, Jesse's an avid fisherman. He mates regularly for his dad and their charter business, Think Big Charters, aboard their boat, Necessary Expense. They fish from Connecticut to the Northeast Canyons. They tuna fish. They're a part of our community and they're great people. Jesse Jr. also enjoys playing soccer, basketball, lacrosse. He races go-karts. He skis, he snowmobiles. It's really sad that he has to deal with this at this point in his life. But we're here to support Jesse, and we're hoping that you all can take a moment and help support him as well. Right now, Jesse's family faces uncertainty with medical costs and other financial burdens associated with treating this disease. And to help ease the burden, there's been a website that's been set up to help facilitate fundraising efforts and help aid Jesse Jr.'s family and the entire Martello family with expenses that they're going to face during this battle. So if you take a moment and visit thinkbigjesse.com, that's thinkbigjesse.com. Starting on February 15th, there's going to be a series of raffles and auctions for some
some really great items and some charters, pen and real easy custom rods. They're donating reels, rods. There's many other sponsors and supporters on there, many of which have sponsored and supported the podcast as well. And we just hope you take a moment to go on the website and support a great cause for a great kid. So again, visit thinkbigjesse.com and feel free to donate and participate in any of the raffles and the silent auctions. So how does, I mean, you mentioned this in the beginning of this conversation a little bit, but how does the species progression go throughout the year for you?
Yeah. You know, aside from having all year fishing, our seasons will look like a springtime. All of a sudden the air seems to get a little more humid. We get some rainy mornings and just seems like there's a lot of moisture that comes in, and that's literally like the turn. And the wahoo will really start stacking up on the ledge. And that's a really neat fishery for us. I think I spend a lot more time doing it than I think most people do. You know, our ledge is a stone's throw away from the beach. So it's really neat to be running up and down 40 to 60 fathoms and seeing surfers sit in the water and cars parked on the beach and you're hooking up fish. And, you know, I've been the surfer sitting in the water watching a boat drive by and I'm like, oh, they're on, you know, and watching them gaff 20 and 30 pound wahoo right there in front of your very eyes. And I think that's really neat. The further we go south on the island, the closer the ledge gets to the shore. And sometimes you're fishing, you know, just right off of a cliff. It's absolutely insane how close you are, like into like 40 to 60 fathoms. And to take bites right there and have this volcanic backdrop and just not a single house anywhere in sight is so impressive. Like, it doesn't get old. I don't think I'll probably be 70 years old, still go down to these places and be like, this is amazing. So that's our springtime wahoo run. That usually starts sometime right around April. I will start seeing big wahoo in February and March, but they don't bite trolling lures as well yet. I think the numbers aren't here, so their aggressiveness is a little bit on the lower end of the spectrum. But they do like a live bait really well in those early spring months. And they will be bigger fish. They'll be in the 40s and the 50s. We don't have giant wahoo like they get a lot in the Caribbean here, but we have numbers. And once you start to make that transition into that April full moon, that May full moon, you'll get the smaller fish. A lot of them are 18 to 25 pounds. And they'll be more schooled up. And you will take, you know, triples, quads, all 6-7 lines go down, a lot of doubles, things like that when you run through piles of fish. So as you progress into the summer there, coming into late May and June, all of a sudden we get a big run of ahi. They seem to come in from Kauai first. They hit Kauai in Oahu, so they must be coming from the north, and then they fill down into the island chain, and you'll start catching them what we call blind. We won't see them. You won't see birds. You don't see any life. And boom, a big jacuzzi in the water. And you just know, you're like, that's a tuna bite. They leave a bigger footprint in the water than just about any kind of fish there is.
Yeah.
And yeah, then you'll start seeing them jump everywhere. Like through half the summer, you're looking at like 100 to 200 pound ahi flying out of the water. And you can drive all around them and they won't bite anything. You know, they're tunas. Yeah. They're tunas being tunas.
Exactly.
They're filling up on micro baits. Yeah. And, you know, like the stuff they're eating is like the size of a small circle hook. So good luck finding something that right. They want to eat. Occasionally you get a suicidal one, like around the tide change or something. They get a little wacky and they bite lures. But the marlin fishing really usually kicks in the summer too. So the trolling from April all the way through September, it's pretty much strictly a trolling fishery. There's not a lot of live baiting happening unless you're live baiting small tunas, you know, our little skipjack tunas we call mankus. That's about the only live baits you're going to find in the summertime, our little opelu. Even though they're here, for some reason, they're really, really, really hard to catch. So they they won't start biting again until late September, October. They'll come back in and it'll transition back over to wild pelly fishing. October can be really transitional. Sometimes there's really good marlin fishing. There's usually a good wave of mahi-mahis that like to come around in the fall. So late September, October, typically we'll be kind of chasing around buoys, any sort of state fad or private fad that's set around here. Hopefully you can get to it in time before someone else will and throw some baits at it, catch a few mahi-mahis.
How often do those, I'm just going to pause you for a second, but how often do those like reset? Like, is it like a next day there might be fish back on it? Or yes. Is it like a tide change? Yep.
Gotcha. It's any given time in the day. If there's bait there, and let's say there's one or two mahi-mahis there that are smart, they don't want to eat any lures. They've been poked at. They've been spearfished at. They're like, yeah, get away from me kind of fish. If they're there and another group of fish swims by, they will join them. So at any given time of the day, you can roll up at one of these buoys and a new batch of 5, 6, 10 mahi-mahis might have showed up. So it doesn't hurt to try even in the middle part of the day or the later part of the day. Hmm. But again, like you said, those tide changes, there may be a pack of fish that are down the chain, don't want to come up from 20 fathoms where they're at. And then you come in during a tide change and they're up on the surface and they're hungry. Everything here revolves around tide changes, you know.
Same.
It's crazy. And we don't have tides. We're 2 feet max, you know. But something about right before it changes and a little bit after it changes is definitely a very pinnacle moment of lunar activity that gets fish going.
So you're even seeing changes with mahi on tide changes?
Yes, most definitely.
Wow.
Yep. Everything that swims out here seems to be affected. The only thing I ever find that it really doesn't matter is a lot of our ground fish, which we don't have a ton of ground fish. The amberjack, things like that, they seem to bite all day long.
Those things are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. And if you find something floating, if you find a floater, whether it be a log or old net, but more recently than not, it's these, I don't want to say they're Chinese, they're probably Taiwanese, but they're just these purse seine fishing fads. Basically, these countries build these just insane fads, and they're raft basically together, and then they have a few hundred feet of net like all meshed and taped together and everything going down like almost 200 feet. And they are so well built, it's ridiculous. Like, these guys build some killer fish tracking devices. They put a GPS on it, they throw a bunch of them out, they track them around, and then they go with their seine nets and just net the entire thing up. Wow. Extremely destructive way of fishing. I think it has to be dealt with. I know there is some new laws that just got passed on how many these boats can actually put out. They're restricted to like the amount they can use and things now. And, but you know, they're only keeping the tunas and they're throwing away everything else. Yeah. You know, mahi-mahis die by the thousands. And, but, yeah, going back to that, finding those floating, debris. Yeah. If you find the right ones, man, it's just wide open. It doesn't matter. Anything you put in the water is just getting absolutely crushed.
That's awesome.
And there'll be big tunas on them too. You know, they're designed to hold big eyes. And I think that's why the thing goes so deep down. When you first show up and you're the first guy there, there'll be like 60 to 80 or 100 pound big eyes on the thing and take a couple of trolling bites. And then that sends the pile down. And then the rest of it's going to be mahi-mahis and wahoos or smaller tunas, whatever else is left on surface.
Do you ever get the big eyes like inside where you're fishing typically on charters? Or,
you know, the big eye fishery here is interesting. Only in like late February and March do you randomly just catch some big ones trolling. They'll be 200 pounders. But it's not a common fish caught on hook and line sport fishery type thing here. However, guys like, you know, Kenton Gear and the longline commercial fishermen and the night fishermen, they do catch a lot more of them. And that will be your really high quality fish coming out of Hawaii too. It's, you know, a fish that was caught on longline gear. It fought down in cold water. It died down in cold water. It's a beautiful graded fish, but it's not a real big sport fish for some reason. I don't know why we don't get more of them. And unlike you guys, I've never seen one ever by any pilot whales.
Interesting.
I've tried so much. Oh, you got to fish around them at sunset. Yeah. And I get so excited going, one of these days I'm going to catch a giant big eye out of these damn pilot whales.
Oh, I hope you do. I hope you get like a 300 pounder out of there. Yeah.
That's so strange how that different is. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, backing up just a little bit. So I think you left off at like October, November in your fishery.
Yeah.
So from there to the rest of the year, what are we looking at?
Yeah, October, November, usually my season. You know, usually I'm running a gun into a buoy, which has gotten increasingly more difficult because, you know, going back a few years, me and one of my crewmen were really kind of pinnacle on the forefront of figuring out how to catch these little live baits in the daytime or in the morning time. It wasn't a real common practice, especially for a charter boat. You had some commercial fishermen that were good at it, kept it under wraps. You had some commercial fishermen that go out at night and catch all their bait. And these guys are running around in, you know, 18 to 24 foot skiffs and, you know, powered with a couple of hundred horse, you know, outboards, and they're quick. So, you know, they're off, you know, and they're going to fish a private fat or somewhere. And, you know, we never saw them. They would disappear. And if they were ever somewhere that was biting, they never told anyone. They were commercial fishermen. They didn't have to. And so here we come as these charter fishermen. They're trying to build a brand, you know, trying to get charters, trying to like actually make a name for yourself, for your business. And it was a double-edged sword because we had to post a lot of what we were catching and what we were doing. And we were really, really, really good at it for a while. And partially it's because we were one of the only few boats that were doing it. And we could go to any buoy at any time of the day and catch fish, catch mai mai, catch tunas. They were the first opelus they had seen thrown in the water that day. So, you know, fast forward to today, we go out to catch bait every morning and there's 25, 30 boats everywhere we're going and they all got bait. And they're all got fast boats and I'm on the slow boat, dude. I'm like, great. You know, I got to get real lucky now. So it got a lot harder for me. It got a little easier for everyone else. So it's leveled the playing field off. And, I don't even remember where I was going with that.
No. You got it.
Yeah. So coming back into the my season and stuff. Yeah. It's gotten a little more difficult for me personally to be able to go hit these buoys up and yank five or six my's off of each buoy before anyone else has gotten there. Mm. So I've transitioned a little bit more over this last couple of years with the extra competition, that I have spent a little more time bottom dropping and things in the fall, getting some of that stuff out of the way. It's a little more guaranteed catch. You know, everyone here turns their nose up at amberjacks and trevallies and like, why do I want to do that when there's marlin and tuna around?
Because an amberjack will break your body and your spirit.
the charters love it. Yeah. They don't know. And, you know, so much of a charter reaction is based upon your reaction. You know, if you're like, oh, stupid amberjack, well, they don't feel like they're doing anything cool. But if you're like, oh, yeah, things yanking. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Look at your legs. They're quivering already. Like, you know, you get in the game with them and make it exciting. That's the biggest fish they've ever seen. Half of these guys only catch walleye or trout or small bass.
It's always a walleye.
You know,
if
they catch walleye, they will let you know. They will let you know they fish for walleye.
100%.
Multiple times.
It's like being vegan.
Yeah.
So you could be talking about the best TV in Best Buy and they want to tell you how they're vegan.
Yeah. My old deckhand Jaw, oh man, he told me one day he came upstairs and he goes, dude, he goes, I've never seen a walleye, but I freaking hate that fish. He's like, I don't care if I ever see one. He goes, if I hear about a walleye one more time.
Dude. 100%. Yeah. I guess it's everywhere in the whole world.
Oh, I think it is. I think it is.
I never want to. I've never caught one. I have absolutely zero desire to catch a
no
walleye.
Desire.
No, yeah. Nothing.
Yeah. Oh, God. That is, it's so true and so funny.
Dude.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
So, but yeah, you know, you can have a great time doing that bottom fishing stuff here. Yeah, as a captain and a crew, it gets a little mundane, but it catches fish and it gets you good tips and, you know, it makes a lot of fun. So, you know, if the fishing is a little quiet and I know I only have a shot at maybe catching a marlin if I troll for 8 hours, I'll probably opt for the bottom fishing stuff. And, you know, the fishing's been really good here. Like I said, this whole fall hasn't fallen into the normal portrayal of Kona's typical season. So, you know, I've been marlin fishing more this summer and fall than I have, you know, in 2 years previously combined. Wow. Just because it's been that good. So,
you know, any reasoning? Are you seeing differences in bait or anything? It's just more fish.
No, no. It's just that year.
Yeah.
You know, and I go back to like a couple of years and think about it. And this did happen. It just happened at different times of the year. I do remember 2 years ago, we had a tournament season and there was a couple of boats. Captain Teddy Hoogs. He's on the Buana. Tracy Epstein, he's running a boat called the gosh, I don't know why I always forget the names of the boats more than the guys. But anyway, they were killing it, dude. They were trolling around FADS and all these state put and private put buoys and catching 6 blues a day just trolling. So it's you know, there's certain times of the year where they just want to hang around these FADS, and then other times of years you go to FADS and don't ever see a marlin there for, you know, weeks at a time, even though there's tons of bait there. I'm like, why not? There's food here. Why aren't they here? But I can definitely pinpoint a few seasons in specific where guys were just absolutely killing it around FADS all day long. And this just happens to be another one of those like runs of FAD fish. They are generally all in the smaller range, about 100 up to 200 pounds. And now there's a ton of bait available, so you can live bait them and catch them on, you know, little 50s and things like that, and just have a blast with a smaller fish instead of trolling 130s. And, you know, 100-pound marlin on 130s are exciting, but it's over really fast. You know, you're talking about 5 minutes tops, and that thing's either on the deck or, you know, released.
Yep.
But catching them on a, you know, a narrow 50 with, you know, 100-pound Spectra on a little 150-pound leader, it's a blast. Yeah. And it makes it a challenge because, you know, now you're trying to deal with the fish at the boat like you guys deal with these big fish on 150-pound leader. Yeah, closing the gap gets real difficult, even on a small fish.
Yeah.
And with you guys dealing with monsters, it's that's just a good way to add a challenge to it, you know.
For sure.
Yeah. But Kona is a big tackle fishery. You know, it's every boat you see here has a gun of all 130s. Everything's 130. And that's because you don't know what's going to show up in the spread. And I know that's a question you might have. What shows up in the spread in Kona?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What is like the scariest large fish you've either caught, hooked, or seen in the spread?
The scariest fish I have hooked, I still have no problem calling it 1250, 13.
Oh my God.
I remember it came up it ate a 9-inch bullet, and I saw this fish come up and I yelled out. I got really excited, which sometimes I get medium excited, but this one I could barely get the words out. And I was just like, big fish, big fish, big fish, short rigger. And it came up and it ate this bullet, and the line just went slack. And I was like, yelled at my crew. I was like, dude, you got to crank on it, wind on it. You know, I was like, he's swimming towards us. And sure enough, as he's cranking winder, the thing was already up on the short bait, getting ready to eat another lure. And so he cranked tight on it and came tight and had it. And I'm assuming this lure was probably down in its gut already. And he hooked it and the thing took off. We cleared. It started jumping. And when it came out of the water, the girth, I mean, the absolute thickness from like top to bottom, I can't even believe the thing could get its piggy self out of the water. It was ridiculously round and fat, and I got kind of scared. Like, I don't really admit this to too many people, but I got to the point where I honestly was like, fuck, I hope this thing just comes off just yeah. So I don't have to ruin it next to the boat, you know? Yeah. I was like this is the first time I'm actually really kind of like really nervous about something that's on the other end of the line. And I had to like talk myself up. I'd be like, no, dude, this is your moment. You got this, bro. Like, yeah, come on. You know? And I did. I talked myself up, and the thing started jumping, and I just kind of let out one of those banshee yells, like, yeah, you fucker, jump it out. Let's go, me and you. Just like Lieutenant Dan in the tower, you know. Bring it on, Storm. You know? Got next to the fish, got close, and we had it going. We had it on leader going in reverse, and I have a picture of it in the water, and it does. It looks like a pilot whale, like, behind our boat. Like,
Jesus. We gotta get
it's not a real great defined picture where you can say, oh yeah, that's a giant, like, but it's big enough for me to know what the corner of my boat looks like and what the size of that thing looks like. So finally I tell the crew, I said, look, man, we're not going to be able to turn it in reverse. And he's holding on to it on the leader while I'm backing down on it, backing down, and we're making ground, but I'm not going to be able to get it around the corner of the boat. It's so large that if it even makes a slight turn, I'm going to like hit it with the wheels basically. So I'm like, we're going to have to turn this thing around, man. It just doesn't want to come all the way around the corner of the boat in reverse. So as I'm going to come out of gear, I just need you to hang on tight. It's going to stretch you out. And I was like, but I need you to turn its direction, see if we can get it swimming with us so we can have it come along the side of the boat. And as the thing was coming along, I came out of gear, put it in gear forward, swimming backwards across the transom. I flew off the bridge. I grabbed the flying gaff out of the charter's hands. And right as I was coming around the corner to go throw the gaff in this thing, we had 530 leader and it broke. The leader popped in my deckhand's hands and he ate shit on the deck. And I just watched this thing swim away like it was nothing. And I was pretty heartbroken. And I didn't think it was that bad, but I went upstairs and we started to set everything back up. And I started puking my guts out. I was like so much adrenaline dump and so like wound up that I had no idea. And I was just ralphing over the rail. Like, but yeah, I mean, that was a very, very impressive animal. I mean, I saw its eyeballs, like it was so large. Like I was terrified to stick a gaff in it. Yeah. I was like, I have no idea what this thing's going to do. Like, you know, is this rope going to hold? Is it going to start shaking? Is this flying gaff going to rip out of the fish and fly back at us? Like, you know, that could have been a true like life and death situation, you know, for both of us and that fish.
That's wild.
And it's got a sword on its face.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So that's why I'm even more convinced it swallowed the lure, because the leader just must have chafed off on the jawline a lot, you know. Yeah. Just been sanded down to nothing, because even my decking goes, I really didn't feel like I was pulling that hard. And I was like, I'm sure he was pretty pumped up, you know, but it broke, you know, and that's what happens, dude. They're big fish, are won and lost right there at the side of the boat.
Totally.
We had another fish one morning before that, and this is real interesting, and this is a great like Kona moment. We stayed overnight. And we were fishing with this super weird lady that wanted to catch everything on 16-pound test. And she really wanted to catch big wahoo on 16-pound. We went to this buoy the afternoon before, and the buoy was absolutely firing. Like, there was 60 to 80-pound tunas looking like they were being shot out of cannons, just flying everywhere. We catch a live aku and put two baits out, and there's literally two or three marlin on each bait trying to fight over the bait. Like, there was so many fish. And we caught a couple marlin, we caught a nice tuna, and it got dark, and I was like, dude, we're definitely coming back here in the morning. So we go stay in this little bay, anchor up at night, and we're leaving first thing in the morning. The sun's not even like over the mountain yet, and we just crossed the 100 fathom line, which is, oh gee, you know, 50 yards out from where we anchored. We've got two lures out. One is the blue bullet, and the other one's one of those wide-range purple softheads. And we're just kind of high-speeding a little bit, which is probably 10 knots. And I look back. It's one of these absolute sheet glass, oil-slick, mirrored days. Like, there's not a ripple on the water. And I see this movement behind that purple softhead, and I was like, oh, that looks large, boys. Like, and then it popped its head up and, you know, did that typical billfish wiggle behind a lure. And so I usually would tell my crew, like, wind it down, like move the lure. So, you know, a marlin get that weird blind spot kind of right in front of their face. So if you move it slightly to the side, maybe they'll see it a little bit better and get a better shot on it when they turn their head. And instead of winding it down out of the rigger, I don't know why he did this. He actually grabbed it, pulled the line down out of the rigger, and popped it out of the clip by his hand. But he actually had like a drop back in the line, and that fish ate out of his hands, and he kind of dropped back that slack. And when that thing came tight off the rod tip, I'll never forget that fish coming out of the water. Like, it just elevated straight up out of the water. It probably had 7 to 8 feet of perfect clear air just right underneath it. And I was like, dude, that thing's 800 all day long. So we have this perfect glassy water. There's no lures in the water, nothing to clear. We instantly got on the fish, just instantly. And it was great chasing this thing down, just slick water. It never really took a long run, you know, down. It didn't go down on us. It stayed on the surface and jumped around. And we got on it about 15 minutes and got it up on leader. Had the lady in the chair, got her out. We all looked at the fish. We're sitting there with this side of the boat. I'm like, what do you guys want to do? I was like, it's definitely like, I'd call this 800, 900. Like, it's there. Should we kill this fish and go back to the dock? Cause we're supposed to be down here for 4 more days, you know? And, my crewman's like, I don't know what the fuck you guys are gonna do, but hurry and figure it out. My hand is just crushing right now. He's like, just hurry up, figure it out. Put a gaff in it or let's let it go. And I was like, ah, dude, let's let it go. I was like, we don't want to go home now. You know, we just got down here. And sure enough, man, the fish kind of shook its head a couple of times, just straightened the hooks right out. Like, nope. I couldn't even believe how easily they straightened out. Like, they were straight.
Wow.
And that fish swam away, and we were like, wow, that was sick. Like, what a nice big fish. So long story short, we go, we fish, we kill it on fish for the next 5 days. We're caught, I don't even know, I think we caught 7 fish over 500 pounds in 4 days.
Wow.
And a bunch of smaller ones. We never caught any wahoo on 16 pound like we were supposed to. It all turned into a giant tackle trip. And we went back home, and we went fishing on a charter. It was a half day charter right after all this. And, we're trolling, and, it's probably about time to go in. We're right at about that 4 hour mark, which cool place in Kona. You can actually go bill fishing on a 4 hour trip and have a shot. And, I went down the head and I come up and I'm like, just coming up the stairs and my, up to the bridge, my back's turned to the water. And I hear my crewman, this is Jaw. Jaw's a wild man. He's the coolest guy ever. And he's like, oh, bro, big fish, guys, big fish, oh, it's fucking big. And I couldn't even turn around. And he's somehow just leaps from the bridge to the deck on his own Superman powers. And he's on the reel, and it shows up on the center stinger. And this is a little 50. I don't know why we were pulling a 50 around, but we had a little 50 out, a little 9-inch bullet. And this thing comes up on it, and I was like, damn, that is a pretty impressive fish. It's big. And he goes to wind this thing and takes it away from the fish as fast as he can. Well, you can't wind faster than a marlin, I'll tell you that. This thing comes up, and the faster he reeled, the harder it piled on the lure. It ate, and Jaw looks at me. The thing's taking drag, and he goes, bro, I'm so sorry. I was like, what are you sorry for, bro? I was like, let's go get this fucking thing. Let's go. So we clear the spread, and we're getting absolutely dump, dude. Like, we're down into like a third of the spool left, just Dacron like staring at me. And I was like, oh god, like, you know, at this point in time you have to go in free spool almost. Yeah. There's so much line out. And so I'm backing down. We're not making like any ground, and all the lines kind of straight out behind me. And weird enough, at this point in time, I had had some like issues when I was backing down. My impellers would like kind of vapor lock and suck a little air. So I just had to look over my shoulder and keep checking the temperature of the motors, make sure I wasn't getting warm. And I looked over my shoulder, and sure enough, I see the splash up off in front of the boat. And I look and I see the fish. I'm like, oh, he's right in front of us. And it just jumped, and it stopped and just sat there. And its dorsal and its tail are just right up out of the water. And there's three little birds like flying over it. I'm like, wow, this is cool. And so I'm like, okay, go ahead and push that drag up a little bit. And we just drove right to it.
Wow.
Picked up all of our line, got it all back. And the thing kind of came tight. We spun around, and we're backing on it. And yeah, it started to kind of go down a little bit, and I was like, oh no, man, if this thing goes down, we're never going to get it back up. You can't put enough drag on a 50 to boost 8-plus fish. So luckily, the thing comes back up, makes a jump, and I told Jaw, we're backing up on it. Here comes the leader. I'm like, brother, I was like, you get that leader. I was like, don't let it go. I was like, I don't care if you pull the hook, break it off. Just don't let it go. We'll never see this thing ever again. He goes, okay, brother, I get him. You don't worry. I was like, get him. So he takes a wrap on that leader, and I was like, okay, bro, I'm going to come out of gear. I was like, let's stretch him out. You know, let's turn his head. I came out of gear, and, bro, I watched this leader stretch and stretch and stretch, and my boy's down in the corner with a double wrap locked, like full squat bug stance, you know. And all of a sudden the thing comes up to do a jump, and Jaw takes a step back and pulls him over backwards. And the thing just falls over on its head. I knew right there, like, you get these big fish when they go upside down, they get kind of catatonic for a moment. I flew off that bridge, man, so fast and threw a flying gaff in that thing. We pulled it up on the deck, and I was like, wow, it's a nice fish. Like, this might go seven. You know, it's a pretty nice fish for a 50. Well, we went and hung that fish up, and it was 843.
Wow.
Which is an impressive fish to catch on 50-pound tackle. But more impressively, me and Jaw both looked at each other.
Realized how big the other one was.
We knew instantly that we just let go of a grander. So we're like, you can't call it a grander. That's just the rule here.
Yep.
You're a kook if you do. So we're like, yeah, that one we let go was like 975, you know? And it's funny, ever since then, the four other fish that I've had that I would call there at the mark, every single one of them I've lost right at the boat, whether it was a broken leader, a broken hook. Actually, three broken hooks and one broke leader on the last four fish that I would call 950 plus.
Holy shit.
And so it's funny that we were able to let one go so easily, but I can't kill one to save my life.
Always. That's how it goes. It's nuts.
But, you know,
it's nuts to think about too, like, to your point, 550 liter and you're using like 9.0 to 12.0, like, legit hooks. And, and that's a fucking huge animal, dude.
Huge, I mean, you're putting powerful all of your body weight.
At Jim Rizzuto was a writer here. He passed away a few years ago.
He's
written a lot of those books, Kona Fishing Chronicles, like, you know, Fishing Hawaiian Style. Such a neat dude. I had such a good relationship with him. He was so thrilled with how we were bringing back some of the old style way of like catching Opelu every day and catching all these, you know, bottom fish and different types of tunas and sailfish and things that people just overlook in Kona all the time. But he actually talked to me about the fish that we broke on leader and when we broke on the hook, and wrote an article about what's the most critical point in all your connections. You know, cause there's so many connections, between your line, your swivel, you know, your leader, all your crimps, everything. And he had found through all the captains that he had kind of talked to over the years that the hook was the number one most failed place. It seems like more people had failed on a hook than anywhere else. And you would think, gosh, we're using some pretty big beefy hooks, but I guess, you know, just, geometry and the angle that you're pulling on these hooks just finds the weak spot in the steel, you know?
Yeah.
Great segue.
Do you want to ask this question?
So, that's a perfect segue.
I added this word because most of our blue marlin in the canyons are big.
Right.
You know, or like over 500, 400, 500.
Yes. Yeah, so this is perfect for people fishing the canyons. When you're specifically targeting blue marlin, what are you doing? How are you rigging? How are you spooled? Drag settings? Can you just kind of walk us through all of that?
Sure.
On a 130?
Yeah. Because it's interesting. Like, that's one of the things I was thinking about as I was telling you some of these stories, that how can a guy who has this limited offshore experience he's spending these years here dealing with giants already, you know, and have so many experiences with so many big fish in such a short amount of time that a guy that's going to the canyons is going to see in 20 years of his life, versus, you know, 10 years of it here. So one thing I definitely am a strong believer is they're not line shy. You know, these big fish are not line shy. They're coming to your boat. They think your boat is some big school of bait fish, or who knows if they follow around whales because there's bait fish hiding under whales. But whatever it is, they aren't scared of big objects. And once they're up in your spread and have made that burst of energy to get there and follow you around, the line is definitely not going to be an issue if they're going to kill something. So fish heavy, you know, fish 530, fish 600. What are you trying to catch? You know, if you're actually fishing for a giant, then fish for a giant. Who cares if you don't have tunas bite your lines? Who cares if, you know, you pulling hooks on 100 pounders because you just got too much gear and drag? Because when Big Julie shows up, you're going to be glad you got all that gear going. So fish big, you know, all my trolling stuff's rigged with minimum of 530 now. All of our hooks are a higher grade hook. So you've got Fudo, you know, Super Ocean hooks. They've done a good job of making a 9-0 hook with like a 10-0 gauge wire and so on up the scale. So fish a heavier gauged wire hook. Obviously, we talked about hooks failing. So make sure your hook is is legit, because if you're going to get that fish on and you're going to have to pull hard on leader, that's what's going to fail. So basically, we fish all 130s. You know, I have 200-pound Spectra hollow core backing. I think there's 750 yards of that. And then I top shot with like 130. For our tournament line, we use Amalon. I think the Amalon is just an indestructible line for an actual IGFA line. And I feel like it's almost like fishing a top shot of fluorocarbon.
Yeah.
Like it's really, hard. Really abrasive resistant. Yeah. It's hard. It's a strong line, you know. And then, you know, your swivels, obviously make sure your swivels are good size. I've had a debate with some of the other guys we talked about with swivels. We do use some very big swivels. You know, we use like a 500 and a 600-pound swivel, and the thing's pretty big.
And you're meaning snap swivel or barrel swivel?
Yeah, snap swivel. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so my question behind that is, well, if my line's only rated at 130, why do I need a 500 or 600-pound swivel? Because my line's going to fail before my swivel fails. So that'd be the one thing I would leave up for debate, whether you want to use a really big swivel or a small swivel. And I don't know what the difference would really be, if it will help your lures run a little better without so much weight dragging in front of them on a big swivel, or, you know, guys could get really into that all they want. But still, I just use a 500 or 600-pound swivel, just something big and beefy. You know, 530, 600-pound leader, single hooks. I think single hooks are going to be a little bit better. I feel like I've got a better hookup ratio on a single hook. Stiff, make them super stiff rig, make them like a gaff, you know. And these marlin are coming up, and they're obviously not putting things in their mouth. They're using their bill, you know. They're trying to whack that bait and stun it first, and then come around and do their feeding. So what is typically happening is you're getting a marlin that'll come up behind a lure and slap it down with its bill, and you're getting that hook usually. And I don't know about how many of you guys have seen, but they're almost always hooked outside of the face. Mm-hmm. They're always almost hooked like in the nostril or right under the eye socket or possibly in the corner of the jaw, but from the outside in. And yeah, as they turn their head, that hook basically gaffed them, you know? And so that's where you can start asking about hook placement. You know, what do you want your hooks up? Do you want them down? I definitely want them like back in the lure. If you're marlin fishing, make them as far back as you can legally put them. You know, usually on my bullets, I like my hooks facing up, because I feel like the fish come up over top of them. Like their bill actually goes over the leader. And when it does that, it'll rotate the hook kind of facing in towards the fish. For some of the bigger popping style lures, I tend to notice that when the fish come up behind them, it does seem like the leader and the lure goes over their bill. And so I run the hook facing down. So as that leader in line is dragging over the bill, that hook is kind of coming in a downward motion somewhere in that location of the nostril to eye. Mm. Again, these are all super hypothetical, because right. Every fish feeds different, but you know, there is some norms. So fish under those guise of those norms that, you know, fish do feed a certain way, marlin do feed a certain way. But for all the guys in your area that are actually starting to look more into like bigger fish, is fish for bigger fish. Mm-hmm. You know, the dink rod is going to kill you. That's what it's going to come always up and eat. You know, I mean, it's gonna kill you, and it happens here all the time too. There's always some guy that hooks a monster, and I'm a case in point of, oh, I was just running this little 30 out there, and there it was. Yeah, you know,
right.
And, you know, we got lucky and caught that fish. And I think when Jim Rizzuto wrote an article, we were talking about fish that had been weighed on 50-pound IGFA class tackle, and that's the fourth largest blue marlin that's ever been weighed on 50-pound tackle. One of them is the current world record that was caught here in the HIBT, which I think is 1130. I should know that, but it's right there at 11 something.
It's a tank.
There was a 9, I think it was a 940, 930 caught by Marlin Magic in that same HIBT tournament. So that's the second largest fish ever weighed on 50. There was another one in there that I'm missing that someone caught. And then there was ours at 843. So there's four really large fish that are caught. And think about how many guys here that have a lot of experience are fishing. And that's all that you can name that have been caught on that kind of tackle.
At least weighed. Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah, exactly. Weighed and killed. Yeah. Not like, oh, we got it to the leader once and caught it. Like,
right.
You know, exactly. You need to have those actual numbers to be able to claim that sort of stuff.
So your hook rigs, how are you rigging your hook rigs? Or maybe you, I mean, I don't know how you are with spilling knowledge, but.
No, I think trolling is the great equalizer. Right. I think the only thing that does make some guys better than others is they do spend a lot of time making sure new leaders, new cramps, new wire, everything's always clean and rigged and ready for that opportunity. That does set apart people. Although we've had a few boats here that are way less than guys you would like look up to, and they've weighed grander. So, you know, the fish gods sometimes just go in favor of the people that you often question karma and the fish gods sometimes. But trolling is the great equalizer because it can be you or the guy next to you. So be prepared. Mm-hmm. I like to use like a 900-pound cable. Some of the guys lately have gotten into doing like a double twist in the cable to make it the rig even stiffer. And you're heat shrinking the whole rig. And I think one of those crucial things with like rigging lures that gets overlooked, and gosh, I should probably do some sort of a like video tutorial on it, but the coil of the leader is so crucial, and I think it gets overlooked a lot because I see a lot of rigs that technically the hook is sideways rather than up or down. And that coil of the leader, especially if you're using a hard leader, should always be coming out of the face of the lure and rolling back up towards the top of the head. So if you keep your leader in that direction, you can put your hook up or down as long as your leader is always coming out of the lure at the same direction. If that makes any sense verbally.
Totally.
So
basically that natural coil kind of pointed, you know, curling up out of the face of the lure head coming towards the outrigger clip or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can try to stretch 530 all you want, but it's going to have memory no matter what.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's 100%. And you like, some people like rubber stoppers on the back. Some people like toothpicks. I just use toothpicks. I've heard some arguments against some things like that. I don't really have any issues one way or the other, but I do strongly believe in pegging your lures to your leader. I think making it all one unit is pretty crucial to having it run accurately and straight. And I mean, if guys actually spent the amount of time doing that and having better hook rigs, I think, you know, you are starting to see a lot bigger fish coming out of the East Coast over the last few years. And I've had a guy that lives there, and he keeps telling me every year, you got to come for this big rod. He's, all the guys, they're all trolling, all Kona style now. All the stuff you've been doing for years, they do it. You know, it's like the big thing here now. And so, and you are starting to see bigger fish. And I don't know if they're trolling better, if they're running better lures, or they're actually running heavy tackle.
Yeah.
And that might be the key, is guys are actually fishing like Kona style, you know, Cape Verde style, like, you know, big tackle and being ready for 500 plus pound fish.
One thing to add, and I'm just adding this because I've seen it firsthand on your boat, but one other leader trick that I think would be good to talk about a little bit is how you floss up near your crotch loop crimp and what that does for the lure upon the fish eating and sliding up the leader and staying away from the fish's mouth while you're fighting it.
Yeah. You know, there's guys that will do like a floss, a wax flossing. And so when that fish is running, that lure gets pegged up to the tip. I don't do that as much because my toothpicks usually keep it up there. The toothpicks tend to stay in there. And some people say, oh, well, toothpicks like scratch the leader up and this and that. Well, when they're wet, they're not. They're wet. They swell. And they actually peg it a little bit better. And they're soft. You know, they're not like a rigid, hard piece of wood in there. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like they scratch up my leader a whole lot. But it will keep that lure up there at the swivel, which, you know, I don't know if it does me so much for like the lure being in the fish's face, but it sure makes it really nice when you get the leader out of the water and your lure is now behind you and you don't have to worry about it anymore. Where's it at? If you want to hit a fish with a bat or do anything, you don't have to worry about getting the lure out of the way. You know, you want to reach down and get hooks out. You still don't have the lure in the way. So it is very advantageous, I think, to have it up behind your shoulder and stuck to the swivel. Or if you just want to cut it off, you know, you can just cut off a hook and you're not missing your lure, or your hook pops or your leader pops or anything. You didn't lose like one of your favorite baits.
What about, and I know there's a million different head styles and weights and keel weighted, non-keel weighted and jetted and non-jetted. But if you were to put together like your 5-rod, I want to catch a dinosaur spread, kind of what would the profiles be and head shapes be? You know, plug your own shit for sure, because you make a hell of a lure from the transom to your long rigger.
You know, this last few years of basically COVID restarted it for me, building lures again. I was so busy with the boat that I just really didn't have a lot of time to build lures. And then when we had all that time on our hands, I opened the shop back up and started going. And I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. Now I'm double busy again, but I do enjoy it. It's nice to take a break from fishing and get in here. And you know, I am an artistic type person, so it's really good for my mind to do this stuff sometimes. But with that being said, I've got a 16 inch hard head, basically, almost like a purple soft head type wide range sort of shape. I really like that. I made that for like the first time in decade, maybe 6 months ago, and I pull that real close. It runs great in any condition of water, any type of boat, depending on what your wakes are. It doesn't matter. It's a no nonsense, super easy lure to run close to your boat, you know, and that close position a lot of times can be real wonky on cut face lures and things like that, you know, depending on how steep your wake is or how close it is to your boat. So I just put that flat faced hard head out there because I don't have to look at it or worry about it. And it's been eaten quite a few times by some nice fish. I'm not really sure why, but we've missed a lot of bites on it. But they always come up on it first and they eat it two or three times and then switch to something else. On my long corner, which you guys would probably call your left short or something. I do run sort of a traditional cut face lure. Sometimes I'll run a tube bait. Sometimes I'll run a, like Eric's poi dog. You know, we all have a similar shape.
When you're saying little, sometimes, is it like sea condition dependent or bait dependent?
Yeah. If it's got a little bit of bump and a little bit of wind and chop and stuff on it, I'll run something that's a little less aggressive.
So like 10 inch or calm, less. 10 inch or less waves.
Yeah.
Hey, we do get some ugly water here sometimes, all right? But just something with not as an aggressive face. If it's a little bit bumpy, a little bit sloppy, I'll just run something mellower. But basically still the same thing, a 14 inch bait. Every once in a while I get kind of wild hair and I'll run something small right there and like a little 9-inch or a 12-inch cut face bait. And I've gotten slammed by some big fish on those little baits. Oddly enough, every monster fish I've dealt with has eaten a 9-inch bullet. Every single one of them, other than that purple softhead fish.
Wow.
Every one I've caught on a 9-inch bullet. I think that's the number one absolute perfect lure. I don't know if it's just a Kona thing or what, but you talk to any of these captains you've interviewed, any guy in Kona, and I guarantee you every one of them said the same thing about a bullet. And we all run them. And we've really made a transition, I think. All right, how do I say this? Okay, so right now, Koya, Eric, is making a 4XL teaser bait, this big giant lure. There's a guy in Florida that really wants him to make them. And, you know, the East Coast guys are all about big giant lures and everything. And I think they're making the evolution in big marlin fishing that Kona made, you know, back in the 80s and early 90s, where everything was big and we wanted big giant stuff and all that. And here we are to today, and every single one of us captains will sit down on the dock and talk and realize, oh yeah, the 9-inch bullet's the one. Like that's mm-hmm. the one fish. So we've gone away from all that big giant stuff and realized that smaller is just so much more efficient. They eat it better. It fits down their mouth. Like they seem to be less, they have to attack it a less hard to get at it, mm-hmm. you know? So I think they're just on it a little bit better. Not only that, when your fish is screaming around, running around, it doesn't have 8 pounds of resin dragging behind it, you know, which can do a number of issues. I think that is a big thing too, is like not having giant lures really can help keep hooks in the right place and things like that. So going back into like my particular spread for monsters, like I'm not fishing giant lures, you know, and the only thing I'm doing is fishing appropriate tackle. But again, 9s and in a 7-inch bullet, our 843 was caught on a little tiny 7-inch bullet, you know? And so it's just rig for what you want to fish mm-hmm. for. And, you know, guys like, oh, I don't want to catch a bunch of tunas or anything. Well, marlin and tuna eat the same food. You know, I've watched them up on the surface eating little 6-inch bait fish, just the same as I've seen tuna blowing up on little 6-inch bait fish. So, you know, they're in the same area. They're eating the same stuff. It doesn't have to be a big giant lure to raise a monster fish. The biggest lure you've got out there is your boat. Mm-hmm. That's what they're coming to look at. You know, that's the first thing that's getting their attention. A big animal like that's like, hey, what's going on up there? I'm going to go check that out. Oh, look at these little things swimming around back here. Oh, that one's dead. I'm going to get it. You know,
yep.
Like that's the whole like attention span of a marlin, basically, I think, when it's on the hunt.
We think the same thing. We totally different way of fishing. I mean, sitting on the anchor, fishing for, you know, these giant tunas on structure. Mm-hmm. We think the same thing. The boat does the same thing in that situation yeah. as well. That's why we paint the bottom of our boat white. We're fishing around the whales, you know, yeah. and our downrod, the bait that's, you know, 60 to typically 90 feet right below the boat in the shadow line is the one that catches most of our fish. Cause I think mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's the last bait that the fish is going to see swimming into the tide. And it's also right there underneath the whale that's smarter than them finding the food, you know?
Yeah. 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 You know, and you know, as these fish proliferate in the ocean and so do the boats, you know, think about how many vessels they're actually coming into contact with as they're on their journey. And a lot of these vessels are throwing stuff over food.
Right.
You know, there's fish following them, everything. So I don't think it's uncommon at all for game fish to relate vessels to some sort of feeding activity.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, how many commercial fishing vessels are running around the ocean throwing over their bycatch? You know, you see it all over, guys with scallop boats and shrimping boats, and you know, guys will pull up behind them and catch a ton of fish right behind the thing.
Yep.
So it's wild. Yeah, I think it's pretty common.
Dude. So are you running 2 bullets?
Typically I'm running 3.
3 bullets.
My back three, my short rigger, my long rigger, and my stinger are usually bullets. My long center is usually always a small 7-inch bullet. You know, typically you're thinking, oh, smaller marlin or mai-mais or, you know, walleyes or tunas or spearfish. Spearfish love the small stuff. That's a unique fishery we have here too, is those short bill spearfish. And so, yeah, it is nice to have a little bit smaller stuff out. But again, it's rigged like appropriately. You know, I may have 400 pound on that little thing, but it's still 400 pound leader. We're not running like 130 pound fluorocarbon in our trolling gear, hoping for a tuna bite, you know, because if tunas are going to come up and eat behind your boat while it's rumbling and making noise, they're probably going to eat big leader. You know, I don't think line shy fish is as much of a thing trolling, even with tuna. Like once they're going to feed, they're going to feed. You know, I can't tell you that I've seen just a million times them rolling underneath a lure. Like it doesn't really happen that often. They're either on it or they're not, you know, they're either coming up or they're just not even interested in you at all.
Especially going 7 to 12 knots too.
Exactly. Yeah,
they're spending all that energy going up. They're already committed from 100, 200.
Yeah.
I mean, for you guys, and you're marking fish at like 300, 400 feet, right? And,
yeah,
and you're coming, they're coming straight up and eating.
My typical fish that I mark that I'm like, ooh, here we go, is going to be at 40 fathoms. You know, so you're looking at 240 feet, 250 feet, and right in that range. If they're at 35 fathoms, oh, get ready, here we go. Like, yeah. You know, and of course they still don't bite sometimes too, but more often than not, when you mark them up high, that's when I'm like, everybody take a look back there, watch, and sure enough, there'll be something on one of those lures in about 45 seconds.
The first day I fished there with Claire, and we fished with Mike, you were running the other boat. We marked one and it was on the, what I call the right short, in less than 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Less than it's 10 wild. Seconds. From the time it like came on the screen till the time the fish was on the lure.
Some of these trolling camera videos, unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what's beautiful about like Brian Tony.
Right.
You know, he really likes his photo stuff. He loves the visuals. I don't know if he likes that more than fishing. Sometimes you'd think he's really into the visual stuff that seems to really get him going. But having those troll pros where he's watching these fish just rocket straight up, you know, and he's seeing a really good image of how quickly did I mark that fish and how quickly was it there? Mm-hmm. And it's putting together a really neat piece of the puzzle. And it's cool to have guys like them, you know, and he's fortunate that, you know, he's working with a little bit less of a, or a little bit more of a budget than some of us are, but
he's got that. He's got the superpower that you want. Exactly.
Yeah. He's got my superpower. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, what a great guy, what a neat guy, you know, and that he's really into that kind of stuff too, and shows it for everyone else to see and enjoy. And we're all getting like a visual perspective on just like you said, like, oh, I marked it and it was there. Like how fast did that fish come up from 180 feet of water? Like you go swim down 180 feet, you can't even see the surface.
No, no.
And that thing was there, you know, and not only was it there, it was pinpointed accuracy on that one lure. So it's kind of mind boggling, you know.
If you were to rank tuna and marlin as what's the true apex predator, the most agile? Ooh. I know. What direction would you go in?
Oh, you know, it's funny. I say this a lot. I love catching marlin. I kind of hate fishing for them. I love catching tunas. I think tunas are more wily. They're more like, you know, they're like the fox. You got to outsmart them. You know, they're super finicky. People have this misconception all the time. Oh, we don't want to go for marlin. We'd rather just go catch a bunch of tuna. And I'm like, you and me both. I'm like, do you know how hard it is to even get small tunas to bite sometimes? Like they're so finicky.
Mm-hmm.
I say it all the time. I'm like, they're the ladies of the ocean for us, man. They're always hungry, but if you ask them what they want to eat, they don't know, you know?
Yeah. Great point.
You can't make a right decision, but then when they're ready to love you, it's game on. You can't do anything wrong, you know?
What's that meme that, the notebook, what do you want?
Yeah.
Do you want?
Yeah.
Had plenty of those days.
Oh shit. That's funny.
So I definitely have a real affinity for tuna fishing. I do. It's enjoyable, but when you talk about an apex predator, there is no sight like seeing an 800 plus pound fish being able to maneuver itself with mind-boggling speed and aerial abilities, and you're just like, what the hell is on the back end of that thing?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Brian, you'd mentioned a lot when we were in Canada, like this, the tail and the difference between an 800 pound marlin tail and the whole size of the fish versus an 800 pound tuna. They're in a completely different class.
Totally. It's double, yeah, if not more than a tuna's,
yeah,
tail.
Yeah.
And the fact that they can use that tail to almost an 800 pound fish and almost turn within their own body length.
Yeah.
Is mind boggling to me
at full speed.
Crazy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool animals. So,
you know, I have to give Apex Predator to the marlin. I mean, I really would. I think they are the wolves out there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
they eat tunas. I mean, that's really,
yes.
Yeah, tunas don't eat marlin to our knowledge.
One of the top like five biggest marlin I ever seen, we were actually catching an 80 pound tuna, and all of a sudden the guy in the chair goes, "Oh, I lost it. It came off." And I'm like, "No, the line's coming at us, dude. Just wind, wind, wind." And he wound and wound it right to the corner of the boat. And here we look over the rail, and here's an 80 pound tuna just sitting at the rail of the boat. And I'm like, "Dude, what's going on?" And there, sure enough, there's this marlin just back there behind the boat, just ready to devour this tuna. And it had to be an 800 pound plus fish to want to take down an 80 pound tuna.
Totally.
And I was just like, "Oh my Lord." Like, so we just reached out and free gaffed this tuna. You know, and I was looking for anything I could on the deck to like possibly throw back there at this fish. And we had a lure clipped on and put it out and started trolling. And obviously the thing never came up, but, yeah, I mean, they have no problem taking down what you would consider trophy sized tuna. And they're like, "Yeah, that looks like a snack."
It's incredible. It really is. Well, dude, we've been going over 90 minutes, and this has been amazing. Some awesome knowledge. You're one of the best storytellers that I personally know. You know, well spoken. You stay on track. You know, you have a lot of experience on the water, and I think this conversation,
there's so much left though. There's just so much left.
Well, we'll definitely do it again for sure. Yeah. But
there's so many stories, man.
I know. We'll do just a story time one at some point. Like the biggest thing people want us to do is just get on here and tell fish stories. So we'll do it again. But we want to kind of circle back to you. So if anyone wants to travel to the Big Island, fish with you in Kona, buy one of your lures or a full spread, kind of how do people find you on social media, online, you know, whatever else?
Yeah, I spend most of my social media energy on Instagram. So at Fishing Kona Style would be that. And we do have a Night Runner Sport Fishing Facebook page. I'm probably not the best at keeping up with it like every single day, but I will drop some stuff on there, what we've been catching and things. In terms of like grabbing any of my lures and stuff, you can always like check out the lure page, which is at Kona_lures. Get a hold of me directly. You know, I don't have a problem getting people a custom spread or something put together. And I actually really enjoy that kind of stuff. It's fun to make something. I'm a toy maker, you know, I mean, I make things that people are going to go out and enjoy a day of their life with. And it was the same way making surfboards. You know, people ask me like, "Oh, what do you do for a living?" I'm like, "I'm a toy maker." And that would actually be what I would say to them, just to explain it. And they'd be like, "Huh?" And, you know, but it's really cool that you're putting a day of your life and energy from your life into making someone else's life, a smiling, grateful day, you know, 'cause you know, it seems like we have a lot of days, you know, and it doesn't seem like you have a lot of years. So we got 80 years. That doesn't seem like a lot, but years last long. But if you think about it, we have about 4,000 weeks on the planet, and weeks go by pretty fast. So, you know, spend some of those weeks, man, surfing and fishing and putting joy into other people's lives, you know, and it should reciprocate itself.
For sure, man. Well, you're definitely an inspiration to us, and we're glad to know you and call you a friend. So, thanks again for doing this. And we're just going to end it real quick on our father's three words of fishing wisdom. Remember, you can't catch them if you don't have a hook in the water. Always trust your instincts. And the last one, you'll just have to keep listening. Stay tight, everybody. Thank you so much, man. That was really awesome.
Thank you. All right, boys.
We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, aloha.
All right. See you, man. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Seabros Fishing Podcast. If you'd like more information on today's guest, products that we use, or other podcast partners, please check out the description for this episode on our website, seabrosfishing.com. For information on our tail and fish artwork commissions, or to order our hats and other products, please check out our website or shoot us a message on Instagram. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel, give it a like and subscribe. And finally, if you want to book a fishing charter with us on one of the Mass Bay Guides boats, please visit massbayguides.com and call the office to book a trip. We appreciate you all.